On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Well, for heaven's sakes, welcome to Thorn in the Side Thursday, and I've got one about 3 feet long extending from my right rib cage, figuratively, of course. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you will find the Listen Live button, the link to the chat room, and the PayPal button, and the traditional mail address. The traditional mail address, if you care to support the program that way, is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318. Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801. A gentle reminder, when sending checks or money orders, please don't make them payable to Bob Kincaid. Make them payable to Head On Communications, as Bob Kincaid never sees them. They pay bills. Long-time listener, first-time popping into the chat room, James in Spain is on board. Hey, howdy, hola. Welcome to the chat room. I just want to toss out there for your consideration that we have come very near to matching the generous $1,000 contribution that came in. And we are, goodness gracious, $150 away from matching that whole $1,000 contribution. And thanks very much to those who have helped make that happen. Thanks, Greg. That happened earlier today. Thank you very kindly, Greg. We'll see Monday. The Horn is going to remain alive, but it would be great if we could sort of build this, get the bills paid and build this into a cushion. So anybody who wants to help in that regard is mighty welcome to do so. No, it is. It really is. Not kidding. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and it started with the real McCoy. Duncan checked with me via Skype a few minutes ago and said, throw the third switch? No, switches one and two, mostly switch one. And by that I mean, I hate Windows 8. For some reason or another, we're running Windows 8 on only 4 gigs of RAM, and what was at the time a pretty highfalutin video card. But sometimes it just bogs down to a crawl, and if you have to reboot this thing, you're into a while doing it. And hence the late start, the massive frustration. It took me a while to remember the exact magical incantation of various and sundry vulgarities, obscenities, and swear words that I have to use in order to get the computer to cooperate. But I finally landed on the right ones. I couldn't remember if it was Open Sarsaparilla or Open Saskatchewan or Open... You get the idea. But we're here, mercifully, thankfully. Because it's one thing to be like on the road or somewhere and unable to do the program. It's another entirely when you're sitting there ready to go, and you push the button, and nothing happens. But now something is happening, and I'm ever so happy about that. It is 6:30 p.m. Like I said, we got a late start. I'm sorry. 6:30 p.m. here in the Eastern Time Zone, and welcome to Thorn in the Side Thursday. We have plenty of thorns. We got lots to work with this evening, without a doubt. Let me start out by offering my sincere thanks to Nicole Sandler, Nicole earlier today invited me on her program to talk a little bit about the AIC Act and mountaintop removal. We had a wonderful conversation. She's a very good conversationalist, and it was I hope meaningful and provided information for people who might never have not even be familiar with mountaintop removal and the agony that Appalachia endures every day. Thorn in the side? Yeah. I take this one personally. Joe Manchin, allegedly my senator, Joe Manchin, allegedly a Democrat, Joe Manchin, who has decided that, well, Joe Manchin would prefer never to be even seen in the same town as that one that lives in our White House. And so he announced that he is in favor of gutting the individual mandate and thereby gutting the Affordable Care Act so that people who badly need health insurance in this state and others can die quickly instead. I remember a long time ago when our buddy Reverbo turned me on to Richard K. Morgan's magnificent book, Altered Carbon. And in particular, he pointed out to me a passage in which I have to find it here. I'm trying to We've had an update to Kindle, and it doesn't work the way I... There it is. Richard K. Morgan's futuristic dystopia, Altered Carbon, contains the following. The personal, as everyone's so fucking fond of saying, is political. So if some idiot politician, some power player, tries to execute policies that harm you or those you care about, take it personally. Get angry. The machinery of justice will not serve you here. It is slow and cold, and it is theirs, hardware and soft. Only the little people suffer at the hands of justice. The creatures of power slide out from under with a wink and a grin. If you want justice, you will have to claw it from them. Make it personal. Do as much damage as you can. Get your message across. That way you stand a far better chance of being taken seriously next time, of being considered dangerous. And make no mistake about this, being taken seriously, being considered dangerous, makes the difference. Make it personal. And the fact that that quote contains, that passage contains the reference, idiot politician, well, seems so apropos insofar as this is a Joe Manchin story. Because see, everybody from Dan to Bathsheba knows that the Affordable Care Act simply will not work without the individual mandate. It just doesn't. So there's Joe sidling up to the sleazebag Republicans, the Jefferson Beauregard Sessions, the turds, and the tail gunner Ted Cruz's of the world, saying that he would be in favor of gutting the mandate, saying that he would therefore be in favor of gutting the Affordable Care Act altogether. There's no way I could not vote for it. It is very reasonable and sensible. Surprised he didn't say it was balanced. That's his favorite word.
don't put the mandate on the American public right now. Give them at least a year. If you know you couldn't bring the corporate sector, you gave them a year. Don't you think it'd be fair? Stupid bastard. I mean stupid. Stupid with a capital stoop. He has a state with... We're a small state, 1.5 million people. I mean, hell, there are mid-sized cities. That are bigger than our entire state's population. You could put our entire state's population in one borough of New York. Or L.A. Does L.A. have boroughs? But there's a lot of uninsured. And the fact of the matter is, I'm one of them. And I don't know if I'm going to, if I'll be eligible for the Medicaid expansion, I would hope I am, or if I'm going to have to buy for-profit insurance. But even the for-profit insurance is going to be dramatically less expensive as long as we can keep the Affordable Care Act alive. But Joe Manchin has government-sponsored health care and doesn't give a good goddamn whether the rest of us do or not. He also says he supports efficiencies in Medicare and Social Security. Can't we agree that we have one hell of a debt here that we've got to get a handle on? So Joe Manchin, walking around as he always does with one licked finger sticking in the wind, has decided to stick it to his party, his president, and the people of his state. But you, we, us, the members of the Horn Family Commune, are not surprised by this, because we know better than anybody else that Joe Manchin has been turning a blind eye to people who are poisoned and dying in this state for years. Joe Manchin, we are not the dust beneath his shoes. We who live around mountaintop removal and bury our dead and ask questions like, what kind of cancer does she have on a routine basis? Some statesman. And he was trying to get all pithy. He said, I said pithy. No, I don't have a lisp. He was trying to get pithy when he said, when you get caught in this quagmire, this swamp, if you will, of Washington, you're going to get a little stink on you. I don't know how we would ever know, because Joe Manchin is absolutely covered with the stench of the blood and the death that comes from mountaintop removal coal extraction. Heart disease, cancer, birth defects, genitourinary problems, bone diseases, digestive tract difficulties. You may recall I went to a screening of The Last Mountain over in Cumberland, Maryland, back in August, and at the end of the film, just by way of doing a little bit of epilogue, I noted, you saw Larry Gibson there, right?
Yeah.
He's dead. You saw Judy Bonds there, right?
Uh-huh.
She's dead. The lovely redheaded lady walking into the house with Beau Webb.
Uh-huh.
That's his lovely wife, Joanne. She's dead. And this is a film that came out 2 years ago. And the principals are either dead or dying. no one working at Coal River Mountain Watch right now has health insurance. The numbers of uninsured underneath the toxic waste hells of mountaintop removal sites themselves, the number of uninsured there is shocking. Tragic. Horrifying. But it's okay with Joe if we can just put it off for a year. Of course, you know how this trick works, right? A year from now, if he was to get his way, he would declare, "Well, I still see a lot of problems with the Obamacare, and I think we just need to put it off for another year." It's a tactic that they've used for decades, if not a century or more, here in West Virginia, called delay, delay, fail. Oh, we need to just... When Nick Joe Rahal first got wind, my congressman, first got wind of the science that's pointing to the fact that mountaintop removal is causing a health crisis here in West Virginia, he said, "Obviously, we need to have more studies to find out exactly what's going on," and then proceeded to do absolutely nothing to make those studies happen. Delay, delay, fail. So when I saw this story today, and I was first alerted to it over at Charlie Pierce's brilliant blog at Esquire.com, I was immediately reminded of the quote by Richard K. Morgan from Altered Carbon. If some idiot politician, some power player, tries to execute policies that harm you or those you care about, take it personally. Get angry. The machinery of justice will not serve you here. Amen. This is personal. This is my uninsured daughters, my uninsured son, my uninsured self that he is attacking. We're not the only ones, but it is damned well personal. And that needs to be understood about every daggum one of these creeps who keeps honking and hollering about Obamacare's gonna eat your mama's Bible, or whatever the latest trope is. It's personal. It used to be, if you were lucky, that you could attach some degree of sentiment to your elected representatives that made you feel like they were, that it was personal then too, that they were acting in your best interest. When FDR said the only thing we have to fear is fear itself, he wasn't talking about himself or those in his class. He was talking to an entire nation, millions of whom, because of the policies enacted under his administrations, millions of whose lives got significantly better. When Abraham Lincoln said, "So that this nation shall not perish from the earth," people understood that by this nation he meant millions of people living their individual lives, coming together to form a union that was, as he described it, the last best hope of earth. And all that is upside down and on its head now. Simply because of a bill that was originally crafted by Republicans in the first place, that provides scads of our money to for-profit health insurance companies to offer some middling level of insurance coverage so that we can go to the doctor instead of dying quickly. In state after state after state, it's being shown that the premiums will be significantly lower than they were even expected to be when the exchanges open on October 1st. And, of course, that is the central, that's the central issue. It all gets started on October 1st. And once people have insurance, they're going to be glad to have it. Mothers and fathers who, if their child needs care, will be able to get care. Wage earners who will not simply have to try to gut it out through some sort of god-awful medical malady and hope that they don't die and their children don't starve in that instance. Now, bear in mind, of course, the right wing and its stenographers, you know, the Chuck Todds of the world, in the for-profit media, these folks will be cranking out story after story after story, whether they are true or factually accurate or not, about what a nightmare Obamacare is. But we're kind of used to that, aren't we? From the moment that Medicare took effect, there's been some godforsaken Republican somewhere talking, it's going to go broke, we can't sustain this. Oh, Captain, she cannot stand much more. Just like they promised that every time the minimum wage goes up, the Wall Street types are heading for the ledges and the economy's going to crash, even though it never does. Nobody ever seems to call them on the fact that they have been perpetually wrong about that. So there's that. But there's a bunch of other stuff on this Thorn in the Side Thursday. A couple of days ago, I got a link and a story from Isaac coming out of West Virginia. There is... There's a documentary available at Vimeo On Demand, iTunes, and Amazon. And the name of the video is Oxyana, O-X-Y-A-N-A. Oxyana is a play on words. Oceana, O-C-E-A-N-A, is a little town in Wyoming County, West Virginia. And it is absolutely burning up with drug addiction. And we see it here. I mean, we have I have conversations with my kids about who among their peers is on pills. And yeah, this is a little bit weird to me because in the era in which I grew up, kids drank, smoked dope. Some of them, the ones with money to burn, would occasionally snort some coke. But there really wasn't that much pilling going on. But Lord God, there is now. This is the trailer, or an excerpt, from Oxyana. And listen carefully, and then we'll talk about not so much what's in it, but what isn't.
My customers can shop around, but it doesn't usually work...
After the damned ad. I forgot that I refreshed it. Lord, that gets frustrating. Again, the full documentary is at Vimeo On Demand, iTunes, and Amazon. It is by Sean Dunn, who did the documentary American Juggalo. Is that about fans of Insane Clown Posse, I think?
This is something entirely different, I guess you could say. They're going to make us watch the ad twice now. I must have pissed them off. The story to which Isaac referred me is at the Atlantic. We don't have to have the audio, but it sort of enhances the story a little bit just to get a flavor for the tone around here. They are very, very good at showing this commercial. For United Healthcare, no less. Oh, that's a laugh. But it's a laugh because there's nobody in this film who can afford healthcare coverage through United Healthcare. The name of the article is "I've Done Horrible Things for Dope." And as The Atlantic points out, Sean Dunn apparently likes to work with those folks who exist at the margins of culture because, you know, they're interesting, right? Yeah. Here we go. I hope. That's a coal prep plant noise. That's coal pouring off of a conveyor belt.
Persian is just an extremely complex contradiction. It is this incredibly beautiful place with a huge population of amazing people with big hearts and so much love to go around.
Okay. Are we talking about the same West Virginia? Yeah. A lot of good people, a lot of good hearts. Not a huge population. This is one of those places that's been left in the dust of, and I do mean dust, of progress.
There's this darkness that has come over it that has affected all of those things. I mean, I think in a way it's even affected the natural beauty of this place because as a person that lives here, I almost can't look at it the same because of... And people don't trust each other like they used to because there's more crime and there's more... that you're getting this much more us against them mentality. And... it is.
Gee, I wonder who would foster an us against them mentality. I wonder where more crime would come from.
It's incredible and amazing and awful all at the same time.
Thunderstorm. Great gnat sound.
Why have you been crying all day?
Because I feel like I'm being forced to go to a rehab.
Why?
Because I'm pregnant.
What's the issue?
I don't want to take my kid.
Why are they going to take your kid? Man, just talk to me about it.
Because I'm dirty. I don't know, for the first 2 years I was snorting them, and then Oh no, I just seen how good everybody felt shooting them. So I started shooting up, and I, 4 years later, I've done horrible things for dope. Like, stuff I really don't want to talk about, but just things that the women do, you know, to get money.
I was one of those people that's walking on the street down there. I was one of those people. I was scared to death at first. I was like, oh, my God, I don't want to do this. You know, I was scared. I was really scared because my husband, the reason why he went to prison was because he was trying to support my pill habit. And I didn't have to do nothing. I sat at home all day, and he went out and robbed coal mines or whatever he had to do to get us pills. So when he went to prison, I had to step up and take that responsibility up for myself or sit home and be sick.
You got 19, 20-year-old girls running around here that'll give oral sex, any kind of sex you want for $5 or $10. I mean, it's horrible. Hepatitis C here, they said, is like 70% to 80% of this town from IV users. And that's one thing I've never done. I ain't never stuck no needles in my arm or nothing like that. Yeah, snort them.
Oh, yeah. When's the last time you did?
Just a minute ago, right when y'all walked in here. Oh, yeah. I got a whole pocket full of them right now. I got Xanaxes and Oxycontins. I like mixing them, and that's a deadly combination, too. They say not to mix them, but that's the only way I like to do them. I'll show y'all something. I'll show y'all how the money is. And these blue ones right here, I mean, they don't make regular Oxycontin no more. They make Roxycontin. These are Roxys. That's a 30-milligram Roxycodone pill. That's anywhere from $40 to $50 around here, them are. This right here is an Oxy 10, the top pink. That's $15. This right here is a Pete Xanax. It's a nerve pill. Right there is about anywhere from $2 to $3. I take them and mix them and snort them.
How does that make you feel?
Good.
Good. Haven't seen the whole thing. I will, probably over the weekend. But I did read all the way through the article that the Atlantic, that Isaac sent along. Texas Betsy with a question. She said, what a sad situation. Is it much worse than other places? I don't know about other places, but I know what it is here. And here, it is simply awful. I mean, we're talking about kids fooling with pills in junior high school. Really? Tell a little story here. Many years ago, Ferg had his tonsils out. He came home with a bottle of hydrocodone syrup, because tonsillectomies are painful, and these pain-killing drugs actually have a purpose, i.e. the elimination of pain. We hadn't been home for 4 or 5 hours when suddenly one of our neighbor from across the street showed up. How is he? Oh, poor little, bless his little heart. Y'all mind if I use your bathroom? And it was only when Agnes went to dose Ferg with his pain medication later in the night, she realized that our neighbor, who was so concerned about Ferg's little heart, had grabbed the bottle and gone and done drunk it up. That was, golly, 12 years ago? Something like that? Maybe 10 years ago? No, closer to 12. That's how long it's been going on. And it seems like everybody knows. Oh, yeah, on pills. Oh, yeah, on pills, on pills. The guy who rear-ended the rusty red pickup truck 2 years ago come the end of December was recently busted for possession with intent to deliver pills. It's very real. And it has gotten to the point where even if you have legitimate pain, the docs will no longer prescribe opiate or narcotic pain medications for the relief of it. Dentists won't prescribe pain medication after an extraction or oral surgery. They simply will not write it at the little clinic where we go and never see a physician. You know, down there where I go for cheap blood work Tuesday. No, it won't do it. Because everyone in this state is now, at least in southern West Virginia, is now presumed to be an addict waiting to become addicted. But still, there are questions that remain unanswered, and maybe this filmmaker didn't want to answer the questions. The questions that were answered, what drew you to Oceana? How did you get access to these people? Why do you think people opened up to you? How have residents reacted to the film's portrayal of their hometown? Are there any updates on the town or the people you interviewed? And with that question, Sean Dunn says, slowly but surely, help seems to be on the way. The film helped increase awareness and got the attention of many lawmakers. I think it's going to take some time before you see real change, because there are no easy solutions to a problem like this. Obviously, the drug war has failed West Virginia and this country as a whole. Caging drug users seems to do nothing to curb the problem. It's going to take some big ideas and outside-the-box thinking to ultimately solve an issue this widespread, and that doesn't happen overnight. Some of our interviewees have gotten cleaned up. Some have spiraled worse out of control. It's very hard to keep in touch with them, as many don't have phones or steady addresses. We hear things from time to time, but it's hard to decipher between small-town gossip and reality when you're not actually there. And to that I would add, it's also hard to understand the root causes of a problem like this when you don't understand the culture and don't have any working knowledge of what's going on around you. There was some noise in the excerpt that I played of coal running down a conveyor belt at a coal prep plant. Some of that may have been underground mined coal, but I would submit to you that a great deal of it was probably mountaintop removal coal, because Wyoming County is down there where it happens. And frankly, I don't think you can talk about the addiction problem in central Appalachia, because it's not just southern West Virginia. Eastern Kentucky is burned up with pills. So too is southwest Virginia. And I imagine the problem is similar in northeast Tennessee. Why is that? I submit that it is in large part because addiction follows hopelessness. Substance abuse arises in situations where people have no realistic chance to do any better. A lot of things have to go wrong in a society or a culture before the pill epidemic can really take hold. And just about everything that can go wrong in southern West Virginia has gone wrong. And the first thing you have to look at is the godforsaken, hell-bent, deliriously, recklessly indifferent to the well-being of people coal industry. There's no... The young woman who talked about prostitution, and the man who talked about the teenage girls who will prostitute themselves for pills,
there's nothing for him. Even finishing high school doesn't do much because there's no jobs out of high school. And there is no way most of these folks are going to college. The southern West Virginia that Sean Dunn saw could just as easily be transposed into some developing world country. That's why on this program I have said on so many occasions that Central Appalachia's sacrifice zone has far more in common with Gaza than it does with other parts of the United States. Hopelessness is destructive. Hopelessness is consumptive. Hopelessness is death. And once you pick up the Jones to go with the hopelessness, well, that just numbs the hopelessness a little bit. But sooner or later, that makes the culture worse because you got to have the pills. And there is a huge underground black market for this stuff. The news, to turn on the 11 o'clock news of an evening in a place like this, used to be it wasn't much. You know, somebody had a car wreck. There was a ribbon cutting at some new government building, or maybe a new Walmart opened. But now it's difficult to turn on the 11 o'clock news without seeing from one of the counties down here or one of the counties across the border in Virginia or Kentucky, authorities today raided the home of fill in the blank and arrested fill in the blank on charges of possession with intent to deliver pills. I mean, you'll see a pot bust every now and then. You'll even see a moonshine bust once in a while. But you see a whole lot more pill busts. Because this area has been absolutely brutalized by the coal industry. Because the coal industry doesn't want an informed populace that could possibly do some other job. Mono economies are like that. Go look at the areas ravaged by the oil industry in Nigeria. See the same thing. Go and look at the tar sands area of Alberta, Canada. You'll find the same thing. I have no doubt that areas where fracking is going great guns ablazing, the same things are happening. But it is profound here. And while I look forward to viewing the entire film, I have to say, and Isaac, have you watched it all the way through? I don't know. Have you? Is there any mention of the circumstances in which these little towns and hollers and hills find themselves? Or is this just the hillbillies have a pill problem? Because it seems almost a disservice to talk about a problem like this and then say, well, you know, the drug wars failed. And not talk about the carboniferous elephant in the room. And, of course, you know, Joe Manchin, with whom we started this program. Joe has pontificated from time to time about the drug problem.
he prefers to view it in isolation. Okay, well, Isaac, if you get, Isaac says he hasn't watched the whole movie yet. If you get to it before I do, just let me know. It'll be the weekend before I can watch this. Let me know. Let me know. So since I was a little bit late getting the first, second, and third switches thrown, we'll go ahead and knock off the filibobster and open up the phone lines. If you want to take part in the conversation, you are more than welcome to do so. 304-658-3333 is the number on Skype. Skype is wide open. Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B. K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. Bob Kincaid Horn is the handle, my handle there on Skype, and you're welcome to use that as well. I got the perfect bumper for this. So let's take a break. Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen is on the way. This is Conversation Radio, listener-supported, and generously so over the course of this week. We need to keep that impulse going, if at all humanly possible. $150 will match the kind $1,000 gift that came in, and if we could do that, it would be monumental. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. So, too, the traditional mail address. We'll be right back. I'm Bob Kincaid.
having to cook and trying to date. Busting her ass all day to play Hurry Up and Wait. That's a few things that I hate.
It's Thursday, September 26, 2013.
Mother Nature is speaking up loudly and clearly.
A preview of the latest UN climate report. GOP's new hostage crisis on behalf of fossil fuel industry. Plus...
Folks, that's the future that we're talking about. It's actually an exciting future.
Facing the challenges and the opportunities of climate change.
All of those opportunities and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
Mother Nature is speaking up loudly and clearly.
La, 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 la. I can't hear Mother Nature.
Will the world be played for a fool again?
Yes.
I don't think so.
You're wrong. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, looking beyond the impending government shutdown over Obamacare, Republicans are already looking forward to round two, mid-October, the debt ceiling limit, and they're putting together a list of demands for the president that have nothing to do with the debt ceiling other than increasing spending. Among them, approval of the Keystone XL tar sands pipeline, an increase in offshore oil drilling and energy production on federal lands, and the blocking of federal regulation of greenhouse gas emissions. None of them, of course, have anything to do with paying off the bills we've already incurred, but that's what the Republicans have in store in the weeks ahead.
Proving, of course, once again, that their true masters are the fossil fuel industries.
Exactly right. What else do you have for us today?
Well, on Friday, the United Nations releases its latest major report on climate change, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change Fifth Assessment Report. It's a summary of the findings of all of climate science in the last 6 years. This is the first of four sections to be released over the next year and covers the physical scientific evidence. While there may be some word changes in the final document from leaked drafts, the conclusions are blunt. The IPCC is now 95% certain that humans are responsible for the observed warming seen all over the planet since 1950 due to the dumping of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere from burning fossil fuels.
So they admit there's a 5% chance that Fox News was completely right and all of those scientists are completely wrong.
Well, actually, 95% certainty is really scientific jargon. It is as good as it gets. It means they are as certain that humans are driving climate change as they are that smoking kills and that the sun will rise tomorrow. It's almost as certain as gravity.
Yeah, well, I'm 5% certain the sun won't rise tomorrow, so we'll find out who's right about that.
They say that the warming, quote, has warmed the ocean, melted snow and ice, raised global mean sea levels, and changed some climate extremes. Now, 2 degrees is the limit that world governments have agreed to target in international climate treaty negotiations. The IPCC report now predicts a global average temperature rise in the range of 1.5 to 4 degrees Celsius and potentially as high as 6 degrees, which is about 10 degrees Fahrenheit and far outside the conditions in which human civilization developed. The IPCC report says the effects are already coming faster than anticipated. They predict sea level rise of up to 1 meter by 2100, that's 3 feet, which would displace millions of people and billions of dollars in coastal infrastructure. And they also say that no matter what we do, even if we could stop all carbon emissions tomorrow, a certain amount of warming is in the pipeline, so temperatures will rise from the greenhouse gases that we've already dumped into the atmosphere. And that will impact water availability, food production, extreme weather events, and rising sea levels.
So what am I to make of Fox News and the various newspapers of Rupert Murdoch, all of whom are saying that the IPCC report proves global warming is over?
I would make nothing of them because the IPCC doesn't say that.
Well, I'm 5% sure someone's wrong here.
Now, some scientists do say that the IPCC is being too conservative and excluding data showing high-end impacts. In an interview with Link TV, climate scientist Michael Mann, author of the famous hockey stick graph, says that the IPCC appears to be including only the low-end impacts and not including or telling policymakers about the higher end of impacts, which he says should be included in estimates of risk.
Yeah, that's one point of the UN's report that people don't seem to talk about. It's actually a very conservative report from very conservative scientists.
Meanwhile, all this week in New York City, several high-level conferences are focusing on solutions, gathering high-level environmental, business, and technology leaders and government officials from all over the world, forging partnerships to maximize the opportunities for innovation in climate action, as Christiana Figueres, the leader of the UN's climate program, explains.
Can you imagine a future where cars won't have fuel anymore, but they actually will be charged through inductive power just by going down the streets? Can you imagine a future where buildings will produce more energy than they actually consume? Folks, that's the future that we're talking about. It's actually an exciting future. That is the future of 2030.
2030. I'll be happy if we make it through 2013 at this rate.
Don't worry, we have plenty of good, positive environmental news in our Green News Extra. Check it out.
Well done. At greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help sponsor the Green News Report. We rely on you, not Mother Nature. Find us and like us on the Facebook and follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. Oh, and don't forget to tell a friend. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I used to run guns and dope for a motorcycle group. It was more than a means to an end. I loved my life a crime, I'd have slit your throat for a fucking dime. You should have known then. I would beat the wife and kids every single chance I got. In the morning and the evening, if they needed it or not, I'd work on them butts till their heads would spin. Oh, yeah. You should have known me then. I said, oh, yeah, you should have known me when I was in the groove. I did just like I pleased when myself it did behoove. Don't know what the hell I was trying to prove. Way back then, I'm a sweetheart now. You should have known me then. I lived with a stripper, and I must tell you, it was great. I'd go and watch her shake that thing like Joe on the plate. She'd come home from work, she'd bring a stripper friend. Ooh, you should have known me then. I said, yeah, you should have known me. Oh, I went down the tubes. Every night I would go to bed, my head between two boobs. Lord, it never was no work for me, stealing your girlfriend. I'm the love man now, you should have known me then.
The incomparable Phil Lee. You should have known me then. A lot of folks like that around here. Goodness me. Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn, 28 minutes past 7 p.m. here in the Eastern time zone. And let's go to the phones. I got some truly bizarre stuff out there, but let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, well, you got something truly bizarre on this end, too.
Well, I don't know. I didn't.
Now, first of all, I know I was out last night when you were speaking, when you were playing the young lady, her situation. I mean, I'm so glad that you rerun sometimes so I could, because I've been out eating, so I missed that, the whole thing with the young woman.
Oh, yeah, the big, godly Christian Brian Fisher beating up on a...
Yeah, because now I know what you were going on. Because you were speaking about it, and I'll tell you, well, what the hell is he talking about? Because I think that was all run before I got here. But, you know, that last song you played, it hits home with me. You know, that's how I feel at my age, that I'm not what I used to be. But, of course, I wasn't that intense. I don't know what happened that you try to... Well, you have had the same situation, Bob. You've been exposed to a lot of different things, but yet your own... lifestyle is fairly conventional.
I'm boring.
Well, I was a musician, but when I was home, I was fixing cars and fishing and reading and kind of a stiff in a lot of ways. But I had.
But that also augmented the art too, didn't it, Bill?
Yeah, but growing up in an inner city housing project and. And then spending 4 years in the place run by the good nuns, it's a wonder I didn't get arrested for a nun aside a couple of times, because they were not exactly sane people. And a lot of guys that were out there, they say one guy that I was there with when we were about 10 or 11, he ends up in his, about 82 or 83, he was part of a dope deal that went south and he shot some guy to death. And I thought, you know, you were that son of a bitch when he was 11 years old. He was pretty goddamn nasty. So you...
I knew some that were mean, from first grade forward, and you just knew they were going to be mean all their lives.
But, this drug thing, as I say, the first stuff that I ever messed with, believe it or not, you take a Bix inhaler, take the cotton out, throw in a cup of coffee. We called it popping cotton. Why? Because you know what was in the cotton?
What?
Dexedrine.
Yeah.
You know, that's what gave you that jolt to help clear your sinuses and keep you going. And hell, whether most people know it or not, guys that were flying out of England to visit Germany, that stuff was floating around there, too, around the surface.
Anything for the cause.
Yeah, exactly. And then if your mother wanted to lose a little weight in the 60s, late 50s, go to the doctor. You come home with a jar of pills that we used to call Christmas trees. Dexedrine. But again, I always had this cowardly approach. I would go take one so I could go to work the next day because I'd been up too late. And then that night I'd go home and eat and take a hot shower and go to bed and then get off of them. There was something always in the back of my mind that said, don't try this. I sat with a friend of mine when he ties his arm off with my belt, 67, shooting heroin. And he, you want to try this? No. I just felt...
Pass, thanks.
Yeah, well, too many great musicians had killed them. And maybe I always had one eye focused on these great players that I listened to. And if these, and I'd never attain their status musically. But I'll be damned if this stuff can kill them, it can kill me. And you're talking about how is SmackDown in West Virginia?
I don't hear so much about that. Well, and I don't run in circles that talks about it a lot. Yeah, you'll hear of an occasional bust, but mostly, well, it's like that young woman in that excerpt from Oxiana. She said, I started out snorting them, but then I seen how much fun everybody was, how good they was feeling by shooting them. So they're cooking pills.
Yeah, well, one of my best friends was a suburban kid, and there was about four of them, and they were all doing drugs, heroin, not heroin based, but what am I looking for? The poppy based, the thing that
opium.
Opium, yes. Opium-based stuff. They had a doctor writing a script. And then he got busted. And now all of a sudden, two of them were from, two or three were from upper-middle-class suburbs. And I asked one of my buddies, I said, what's it like? He says, man, have you ever tried it? You blah, blah, blah. And so when I hear warnings like that, I kept messing with it and staying away from it.
Well, it wasn't long. My little learning curve was largely by the printed page, Bill, because I started. I read Kerouac's On the Road when I was 15.
You too.
And went from there to the Dharma Bums, and it was a pretty short hop over to turning. Never mind Catcher in the Rye.
Yeah.
Turning a 17-year-old loose with Naked Lunch.
Yeah.
Whew, man. As he goes through the process of explaining what he calls in the book the algebra of need, I realized I really didn't want that. No, I didn't. No. And the funny thing is, I've had them for pain. There was a time a few years ago when I was off the air for a couple of weeks because my entire abdominal cavity.
Oh, yeah.
And everything in it had decided to go sideways.
Yeah.
And the only real treatment for it was what they called gut rest.
Yeah.
And nothing will slow down the motility of your innards quite like an opiate. So I was put on a diet of hydrocodone, and actually it was oxycodone and water for about 3 weeks.
Ooh.
And I hated it. You know, you go to sleep and you have these weird ass dreams, and all of a sudden I understood Samuel Taylor Coleridge, because you'd wake up more exhausted than you went to sleep because you're just sitting there a captive inside your own skull behind your own eyelids, watching these bizarre ass Fellini films that happen out of your own psyche, and you wake up, make it stop.
He mentioned that term. I remember I was working in one place, and one of the guys working with me was a big Fellini fan. He took one look around the bar that night. He says, I feel like I'm working from playing inside of a Fellini movie. I said, there's some strange people in this joint. But there was something about me that maybe it's the age. I was just a little bit too old when that stuff hit the fan, and I was just a little bit too exposed to too many people who I thought were more talented than me, and it killed them. And right now, the county that I used to love to live in, down by Lake Erie and out east of here, is loaded with the big H, man. It's cheaper than a lot of stuff. And I have to look at that involvement in Afghanistan and shake my head wondering. I used to enjoy, what the hell was it? It was marijuana, but it was came out of hashish.
Yeah.
Came out of Lebanon and Afghanistan, a lot of it.
Sure.
And you don't see it anymore, hardly. I haven't heard about it in years from anybody.
But hash is still around, and with the rise of cannabis culture in the states where there is medical cannabis and legal cannabis, there's a real rising taste for things besides burning the actual leaf. there are some real chemical geniuses out there fooling around making what is called hash oil.
Well, yeah, I remember hash oil when it was around in the 60s, you know. But, you know, I just had this thing. I had watched some good friends of mine wash out on smack and just never wanted to mess with this stuff. And it's bad now. And I've known that down south, Oxycontin was big. And I guess that's... are these guys making it, or is it just some doctors... I know doctors up here who were people love to visit them. Not me, I didn't, but I just...
Pill rollers.
Yeah. Pill rollers, yeah. It was a good piece of change. How do you stop this stuff? Because it's been around, I mean, Hal Hammett wrote about the... What was it? Red Harvest, the guy was drinking laudanum.
Yeah, and I was about to mention laudanum, too, because one of the things that, and it's especially funny when it comes from these teabagger types, Bill, they know so little of American history. I've got a story here about how some Christian Taliban type is blathering on about how Benjamin Franklin hated socialism. And you just kind of, your head just falls off it and just bang, right on the desk. What? Because, of course, socialism had not been.
Of course not.
But the other thing that people neglect, and especially these Puritans, twisted, sexually deviant Christians that they are, the other thing that they neglect to acknowledge or even know is that this country was founded by a bunch of drunks and addicts.
Yeah.
You couldn't drink the water in Philadelphia. You drank beer and wine. Up to 3 gallons a daggum day, Bill. I mean, just imagine yourself. Say, I'm going to drink 3 gallons of beer every day for a week and just see how you wind up. Because I know I'd be a mess.
Yeah. I used to go to bars.
And that was a day, Bill. 3 days. And on top of it, some of the glorious founders of this country were not only drinking 3 gallons of wine or beer a day, they were also pumping down a pint of laudanum because it was an over-the-counter medication.
Yeah, I knew you could buy it over the counter.
Lewis and Clark. Good God, I think they took a barrel of laudanum with them on their expedition and ran out.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
And laudanum is an opium, isn't it?
Yeah, laudanum is basically an alcoholic opium suspension tincture or syrup or whatever the proper word is.
Jesus. I just feel, I mean, I'm at my age, I don't think I want to be around a hell of a lot longer because all of a sudden I've kind of lost the strong urge. I've been trying to get bus transportation to the Y where I used to have in Lake County, bad eyes and everything. I could go over and work out at a low rate, but I could spend a couple of hours walking or doing this kind of stuff, you know, in a gym setting where in case you keel over, somebody sees it, you know?
Right, sure.
And it has enough sense maybe to call. Somebody ain't say. I think the short guy just croaked, but but you know they have more crap, more red tape involved in doing anything in the system right now. To get anywhere, you have to make doctor's appointments if you don't drive like I can't. It used to be 3 days from the time you called in. And now I have to call in and go talk to a tape recorder.
Which sure.
Not a problem if you could see. If you can read like I used to, no problem. But everything has to be played with because of a certain... And this started... This five-day bullshit started when the Republicans got control of the state government. And these companies, these health aid companies... In Ohio, there's small companies set up by somebody with a few bucks, and the people they hire they screw them to the wall. They're paying somebody $7 an hour. And I tell this one girl, I said, you know, I was making that in 1970 when I was driving a small truck for Greyhound. And I said, you know, and rent was $125 a month for a decent apartment in 1971 or two, you know. And these kids, these health aides, they come in and a lot of them work real hard and then they burn. They just get burned out. It should be, you know, in other words, years ago, this would have been a county job with benefits and the whole nine that would get you could attract somebody because you're paying maybe a decent wage and full medical benefits. These folks have no medical benefits. Well, they will have. And I'm not sold on this medical plan either.
Which? The Affordable Care Act?
Yeah. Better than nothing. Absolutely.
Look, the only thing that I'm ever going to be completely sold on is universal single-payer health care.
Yeah, Canadian system, England. You know, the one, I mean, the system that England went to when they, right after World War II because they were so broke.
Right, the NHS, the National Health Service.
Yep.
But the thing is, I have to reiterate that the biggest deal inside the Affordable Care Act is the Medicaid expansion. And people just seem to blow right past that, Bill.
Yeah, that is... Oh, of course, I deal with that now with Medicaid because of, you know, when I was still making a good living, I couldn't do it anymore. I could not drive myself to work. I couldn't book my own band. I had to work for somebody else. And these guys, most of the bands I worked with after my own busted down, they weren't pulling either. And it's not just that. The music taste has changed. Okay, I'll go along with that, you know. But right now, every time you turn around, and the cops want to lower the drunk thing down to, what, 0.5? What, they're not making enough money now? Because I know a lot of people say, well, you know, they're wiping out families. Well, it ain't usually the after-hours, late-night drinker. They're wiping out other drunks and musicians and people or bartenders, you know. Because the guys that wipe out a family at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, they're not usually, they're, you know, alcoholics, no doubt about it. But it's not, you don't park outside of bars at 2 o'clock and then try to lower the things. The money is, I hate to say it, but a lot of it is the money.
Yeah.
Because what's the tax base? The tax base goes to hell when you don't have people paying property tax anymore. So they got
to
make...
Well, just ancillary to that, Bill, one of the things that drives me absolutely bonkers, I've got grandchildren now, and the oldest one is a first grader.
Yeah.
And we've got friends around here who have grandchildren of similar age. And you know, you pay your property taxes, and that's supposed to support your local school system.
Yes.
Well, they've got... And these aren't extracurricular activities... They hand these tykes, and they're tykes, for heaven's sakes, order sheets, and every child in the school gets one, and they're supposed to go out and sell gym cracks and G-jaws and use candles and pictures of horses and coupons for pizza and the jelly and in order to raise money ostensibly for the school. Now, what are the property taxes for?
Where's the taxes going? Yeah, did the property taxes drop off to nothing, or are they got? Did they get the? It's the same way here when they started the lottery. The money was. I was just listening to a guy out of Chicago, and he was talking the same thing. The money was, the lottery money was supposed to go to the schools. This is how they get it passed. And then all of a sudden, no, it isn't going there.
Yeah, here it was veterans, the elderly. And education, maybe tourism too, I think, but please, the vast amount of money goes to the, because, you know, the West Virginia Lottery the West Virginia Lottery is run by a third-party corporation.
Yep.
We, a few years back, decided to take the video poker machines and turn them legal. You know, make them respectable, I guess.
Of course, yeah.
And every bar, you know, every bar had a couple of machines in there, and they were called gray machines. And yeah, they'd pay off, and if you got caught, well, it was a pain in the ass. So they made them street legal and regulated them. And the way it works out is the state gets 52% of the proceeds. And then the other 48% is split half and half by the person who has them on their premises and the company that provides them. What? I mean...
And believe me, Bob, I'm not in favor of drunk drivers because I was one of the guys that was liable to get hit by one. Because I was coming home from work when these guys were coming home from...
Right, when they were out on the road.
When they were carousing. Because I had enough sense to not get falling down liquored up. And, of course, if I had a camper and if I was that shit-faced, I wouldn't drive. I'd go to sleep until daylight. Sleep 3-4 hours and get it out of your system. And I just didn't... I was noted for people thought I was drinking a lot because I had a thermos next to me. Well, if you like coffee and chicory, that's what I was drinking most of the time. Because, I knew enough. My dad was a dance band musician, late 20s, 30s, 40s. And he booked he was booking dancers, females. And when I hit about 16, he told me he had stopped doing that because he said, Bill, their job is to drink with the customers. The dancing was secondary. I was 18 or 17 in a bar, and I'm watching the barmaids work these chumps over for, now we're talking 1961, and these guys were paying $25 for two glasses of alleged champagne between them and the barmaid.
Right.
It's funny, I was observant, and I got educated quickly by watching other people get separated. Because I know that drunk driving is a horrible thing, and there's no defending it whatsoever. But on the other hand, you begin to wonder after a while if this is just another way of getting with the back, what do you say, the back feet in the trough?
Yeah, any hog's always trying to get his front feet in the trough, but it's the enterprising ones that want to get the back trotters there, too.
Yeah, I had been
fishing. Because then none of the other pigs can get to the trough.
Well, I had been bass fishing one night out west of Cleveland, and nice little bass lake out there that I was hip to. Somebody hit me to it. And I'm coming home, and I come through this like public square area, and I'm sitting up high in a big three-quarter-ton truck that I was driving, and... high in the air, I could see the stop sign laying on its side. So I stopped and then went through it. Here comes a cop. His baseball cap said police on it. Bastards couldn't even afford to buy a good hat, come
on. Yeah.
And there was an old Superman show from the 50s, a TV show where they would drive people to the local Justice of the Peace courthouse, which was a trailer on wheels that they could move from place to place. Now, when they were saying that in the 1950s, basically a show that was not even serious. In other words, the corruption aspect of so many of these things, it's like these drugs. I knew one guy that said, I knew one doctor who was so old, he got washed out of the profession. Because they told this guy point blank, because he was the one selling the heroin stuff to kids, to young people in their 20s, either retire or you're going to jail.
Well, let's compare something real quick, Bill, because you just made a little light blink in my head. One of the sources of the problem here in southern West Virginia is the fact that there are tons, and people who listen in Florida can probably verify this, there are so-called clinics in Florida that are nothing more than pill mills.
Yeah.
And so you've got people up here who are mules. And they will drive to Florida, and they will get their scripts, and they'll go get all their pills, and they'll come back up here and deal them. Or they'll take, they'll take carloads of people down. And the pay for driving them down there is half of the scripts. And then they come back up here, and what happens, happens. Obviously, that's because there's ease of access to the prescription narcotics, in Florida. Okay? Well, the same thing obtains with firearms.
Of course.
Here in West Virginia, you can buy a gun a day.
Oof.
Forever. Maybe 10 a day if you got the money and the right ID.
Yeah, and you think these guys are selling these things too.
And then they wind up in some criminal enterprise in New York or Massachusetts or Chicago or right. So on the one hand, there's been a real effort to shut down the pill mills in Florida because it's understood that what's happening in Florida isn't staying in Florida, and that Florida's ease of access to prescription narcotics creates a crisis in the hills and hollers of West by God, Virginia. On the other hand, however, and you know, West Virginia people are raising hell about it, government officials and whatnot. On the other hand, if people in New York or Massachusetts or Illinois complain about the ease of access to firearms down here and want to see the states, you know, the Confederacy tighten up a little bit on access to firearms, well, hell no! Oh, no! That's our freedom! By God, that's the Second Amendment! And you can have my gun when you cry from a cold dead fires.
Well, that can be a right, you know. But
yeah, true.
Sometimes you're angry enough, but yet whenever you hear that said the third time in a given hour, you're ready to act out yourself. Well,
it reminds me of something that a friend of mine used to say whenever... the oxymoron, you know, Flush Flimball, whenever he would use that signature line of his, with talent on loan from God, my buddy would immediately holler, margin call!
Yeah, either that, you better have your pawn ticket handy, buddy, because I used to listen to him, and he used to play that one Clarence Frogman Henry thing, I Ain't Got No Home, and...
Yeah.
The song itself was a good piece of music when it came out, long before Limbaugh was known or was ever heard from. But yeah, it just, I don't know, you know, my one buddy, one of my best friends, who's one of the most interesting guys I met, because he's the son of a World War II veteran, but the guy was in the engine room on a U-boat, his dad, German. And his dad was a fascinating guy to talk to, because what he used to say about the Nazis is, well, they got most of them, but they sure missed a lot too. Was, you know, and there was a guy who was a lieutenant in the what the hell do they call the Navy? I'm familiar with the Luftwaffe, and I'm familiar with the...
Oh, the Kriegsmarine?
Kriegsmarine, you got it, thank you. But I feel bad, you know, because you guys... you guys were young kids.
It's so nice to be referred to as a young kid.
What?
It's so nice to be referred to as a young kid.
Oh, well. I mean, you've got young kids.
Oh, well, okay.
You know, because the Ferg can't be too old.
I'm 17. Yeah. 18 in December.
I remember that age real well. In fact, I can't remember yesterday, but I can sure remember that age. I'll tell you. That goes with getting old. I mean, my memory is giving me fits.
No, we were out walking around the other day, and just because it's fun to look at stuff, we've got one of those classic old Main Street music stores, you know, with the hardwood floors that creak and the guitars hanging on the wall, and you know, the smell of what an old building smells like when it's been occupied by the same business for, you know, 50, 60 years. And, Bill, we walked in there, and they know him, and they don't have any problem with him playing the instruments or anything. He sat down and started noodling around on a Martin.
Oh.
It sounded heavenly. Just beautiful.
Well, I know the guys that I knew, the folk singers, D-28 was a... you say D-28 to them, and I thought they were... I haven't seen guys that excited since I saw guys leave a cat house. You know, it's... or that satisfied, I don't know which, because they just, you know, the guitar players are like that. Although I know a guy who took my job with this one band when playing harp, and he buys these things that cost $65, and they're tuned differently than the standard marine band or the stuff that we started on in the 60s.
Yeah.
They're designed to give him more notes to play. And to me, that's cheating. You know, it's like, I guess it's that's an old guy talking. If you can't do it like we used to, piss on you. You know, that's the way how we feel about stuff, all of it. I mean, I haven't met a musician yet that didn't have a bad attitude. Because you get one after you spend...
What was that old thing about when you get a new harp, you're supposed to soak it in beer or something?
I read Paul Butterfield, when I talked to him, he told me soak it in water. And because I was playing a lot of acoustic stuff, and to get them louder, the water used to... And it would help you bend them. The first time you bend a note, it's like... there's a first time and other things I can think about, but it's not the place to talk about that. But, yeah, because the brass reeds. I mean, the way those guys designed the way of playing blues harp is completely backwards from the way Hohner designed it. I mean, how the hell these old-timers figured out how to get those sounds out of it? And what you do is you force that reed to go flatter by a half a step. And it's a positioning your mouth, and the first time you do it, you take it out of your mouth and look at it, and like, how the hell did I do that? Because sometimes it takes quite a while. I had a book by a guy named Tony Glover called Blues Harp. He was a folk guy. And that guy, because there was nobody to teach me in Cleveland. This wasn't in Chicago. The city wasn't loaded with people like Butterfield and those guys. They went into Chicago and they could sit and talk and play with Muddy Waters, for Christ's sake. And they could talk to all kind of great musicians, and the musicians would pass along stuff. There was not too many, there's hardly anybody here that was playing this stuff when I started, because it was not big in the black community anymore. Those guys had moved on to quartets and Motown singers,
right?
A whole different thing. What I was doing was some guys would tell me, well, after I had 10 years and guy would say to me, my grandmother would love your music. Thanks a lot, you know. Whereas in Cleveland, my grandmother, she wanted you to hear Frankie Yankovic and you know.
And his Yanks.
Yeah, the Ethnics. I guess they were pretty big through West by God, too, because coal miners, there was a lot of Euro coal miners that came into West Virginia, weren't there?
A few, yeah.
At some point, you know, because that's what they would do. I mean, coal mining was a... All through Central Europe, Austria, Hungary, there was, you know, lots of coal under that land. I'm surprised they haven't found oil in Vietnam yet.
didn't they?
Did they? If they have, they're certainly not talking about it. I know there's coal there. There was a lot of coal there. And you and I know the one thing about carbon, but there's one type, there might be another. I mean, hell, when I started working on cars, you didn't buy oil except from Pennsylvania. It's stamped on the top with a Pennsylvania name.
Yeah, the Keystone, right?
Yeah. So that was better oil. I doubt if it was.
My dad was a Pennzoil believer till the day he died.
Yeah, that's the way my uncles were that way, too. That was their... And so was I.
Didn't want any Valvoline, didn't want any... And he wasn't crazy about Quaker State. I mean, it was Pennzoil.
Pennzoil, yeah. That was what I was taught too. And hell, God Almighty, when I was first changing oil, you know what you did with it? You found a vacant lot.
You poured it out.
Yeah. Because we didn't know what the hell. And then of course you stopped. Nowadays you can at least return it to the store, for God's sake, you know. But getting back to the drug situation, I don't know what the answers are, because you and I know this shit's been around forever. But they just keep adding to it. They keep adding things that... I was never a pill head. My first wife, being a psych nurse, she got herself tied up with something or other, the downer, you know. Because they had a diagnosis for what she dealt with in it. They use a different name for it today than they did then. Now, you know, they have to clean up the language. I don't know whether it's to confuse us or to just change the name of the problem. But it's been around for a while. These emotional problems have been around for a long time.
Well, probably for as long as humans have had emotions.
Well, I just heard some of the cast members talking about what performing in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And it was interesting to hear them talk about the roles and the people who played the parts in them. And what I remember reading the darn book. Was it Ken Kesey?
Yeah.
He was one of the Beat Generation writers. But I just don't know where it goes, because I know right now a friend of mine who's one of my best friends, he's got a stepdaughter with a smack problem, and it's much bigger than they're letting on, it is. And now it's functionally cheaper than a lot of other stuff. When I heard that, I almost fell off the chair. Well, you remember the Frank Sinatra, the man with the golden arm?
Oh, yeah.
So it's been...
And Don Rickles did a turn in that, too, didn't he?
Who?
Don Rickles.
I think he did. It's been a long time since I've seen it, but... So this stuff isn't new, but it just seems to get bigger and bigger. And it sounds funny to say this, but the fact that it cost a fortune to go to college and the jobs that people used to get are no longer here. And unemployment is a horrible thing to, you know, every other aspect of the living. But I just don't know. I had a daughter that I didn't meet till she was... Her mother wouldn't marry him. Her mother was a rich girl. And what the hell she was doing playing with a kid from the projects, I don't know. But she thought it was interesting for a while.
Novelty.
What?
Novelty.
Yeah.
And probably pissed off the parents, too.
It broke my heart because I liked her so much because... I don't know why, but... And so my daughter met me when I was 50. And she was 26, because I was 24. I never knew a thing about her until this one friend of mine came to me and said blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. And the following Monday, I talked to my own daughter, and she was just... My first question was, how much do you read? She said, constantly. I said, well, you just proved it.
Yeah.
Mine, all right. And we got along real...
You didn't toss her a harp and say, you know, blast out a couple of...
No, she was taken with that. She just thought, hell, my grandkids were just shocked to come out. They were young kids when they first heard me work, and they said, how do you do? How do you make all those noises? Well, belch a lot, I guess. I don't know. But things happen in life that we have no control over, and you just roll the best you can with everything that happens. Because, Bob, I should have been a college graduate. There's no damn doubt about it, but... When you live in the projects and you're fighting every day, every time you run into this one gang of kids, you were fighting with them. And by the way, in case anybody's wondering, it wasn't along ethnic lines as far as skin pigmentation or lack thereof. It was not racial. It was just there were kids that liked to fight and they liked to start it, and if you didn't stand up to them, you'd never get rid of them. So I finally got the hell out of school and got the hell out of the neighborhood. And then a few years later, I found out I couldn't play clarinet like Benny Goodman and picked up the harmonica. So and I played well enough to get by, and I was lucky. The time and place were correct, because that's what it's all about, a lot of it. But I don't know what the hell you guys are going to do that are going to be around long after me and going to have to deal with this. With this junk stuff, because it was...
Well, the whole thing, Bill, I'm getting more and more frightened, and that's the only word that works. I'm getting more and more frightened of what the future looks like.
Well, it was there.
Because the fact of the matter is, the right wing are winning.
Yeah, well, this is their way of keeping economic control, too.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't know, maybe there's something wrong with me, but I have a hard time understanding people that are sitting on $3 billion and want more. I just don't get it. It just doesn't make any sense to me after a while, because I was content to with the wages my second wife and I were making and no kids to pay for. I had everything I wanted, Bob. I got a picture on a wall of me holding a 7-pound walleye that I caught from Lake Erie's break wall because knowing when to fish it for. And that rod cost about $85. But It took me 4 weeks of saving money to go buy it. I just wouldn't go down and get the plastic out of my pocket. Because I was just raised wrong, I guess, you know. Those old-timers, those uncles in that mine, man, they were the tightest-fisted, fix-anything bunch of guys I ever met in my life. And I'm so proud to have known them. Hell, my one uncle had a job. His job was driving around Ohio to movie theaters, taking out, you know, the first-run theaters would get the new stuff. And then they'd run the second stuff through neighborhood movie houses. Now I guess that's all done on television through, you know, cable.
Yeah, and online stuff, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Bill, you have yourself a wonderful evening. It's always good talking to you.
But you're right on the money. This stuff you're talking about, there ain't no... When a guy 70 years old knows about it, it's there, believe me.
Oh, I have no doubt. I have no doubt.
Take care of yourself.
All right. See you, Bill. Mr. Stress, our buddy Bill, calling from Cleveland. And we'll take a little break. If you want to get in on the conversation, you're welcome to do so. 304-658-3333. Via Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. I haven't had anybody using the Skype line in a while. Either way is fine. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I'll trail her on the threshold, and I'm waiting at the door, and I'm standing in the darkness. I don't want to wait no more. I've seen without perceiving.
12 minutes after the hour. Sometimes some of the, I mean, I love Brown Eyed Girl as much as the next person, and Moon Dance and all of this. But sometimes I just love some of the less frequently played Van Morrison cuts. That's Dweller on the Threshold. And it wasn't the one I had in mind. I can't remember. I just kind of had a hankering to hear it. With these, there's one that just begins with these really, really lush horns. And oh, well, we'll get it sorted out. A little reminder, I mentioned, and we've got somebody on the Skype line right now. I mentioned nobody hadn't had a caller via Skype in a while. And then Sparky reminded me in the chat room that we'll be putting it to good use tomorrow night, and that's the absolute truth. Because tomorrow is Friday on the Front Porch, and we will get together as much of a Front Porch gang as wants to participate. If you want to connect with the Friday on the Front Porch or the Horn Malloy Skype group for conversation purposes, just shoot me a note with your Skype contacts, and I'll pass it on to Skype moderator Sparky, and we'll get you all sorted out. Let's do go to the Skype line. Will from Chicago is on the line there. Hey, Will. 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 Oh, Will.
Hey, Bob. Good to hear you. And
yeah.
Hey. Hi, Bob. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I've got you.
Can you hear me?
I got you.
Oh, boy. This isn't working. Oh, boy. Can you hear me now? All right, good, good. First, I will congratulate you on a very good interview on Radio or Not with Nicole Sandler.
Oh, thank you.
Which I'd urge everyone who wants to learn more about the AIC Act to listen to. What's going on in Appalachia is similar to what's going on in areas hit by fracking and other abuses. Essentially, we have corporations who are backed up by the politicians that they fund, who are quite willing to make anyone sick or die for the sake of profit. Or if this was something that a foreign nation was doing via its agents, people would be up in arms. But because it's good old fashioned money-making American capitalism, does it really matter who gets sick where? Not too many.
Right. As long as somebody's making a profit, who cares who dies?
Exactly. I mean, this is rather like the gun issue, that things mostly will change when we decide to use our heads and also have a change of heart, namely giving a damn. As this is Thursday and Thorn in our side Thursday, I would like to mention a group of very organized sociopaths who call themselves the Republican Party, with their unprecedented plans to hold the entire nation's fiscal health conscious, all for things captive, all so that they can prove to Wall Street and other large industries how much they truly love them by demanding every sort of give me that can be sent to a corporate backer at all. I mean, everything from the Keystone XL pipeline to limiting Dodd-Frank, etc., ad nauseum, literally. I mean, it's in one way, Bob, this is refreshing, because they have finally shown all their cards and pulled off the mask and...
You know, I think you're right, Will. I don't want to challenge them, but I really do. I think that they've just about shown the full extent of their vileness, haven't they?
Pretty much. I mean,
what's left? Dare we ask?
Repealing the amendments passed after the Civil War and installing Dick Cheney as pharaoh. Oh, wait, that's Dick Cheney's dream. Never mind.
Well, there's...
his head for a moment.
Yeah, getting them uppity women to give up the vote. I mean, after all, you remember when Anthrax Coulter said that was one of the worst mistakes the country ever made.
Yes, well, but then again, for Demon call to, I will dispute those who say that she's actually a man. I'm working with my theory that she's a demon from another dimension wearing a human suit who's doing a very bad impression of a woman.
Can't argue.
Yes, I mean, we have to ask ourselves what sort of society we want. Do we want one where people exploit each other while our national and global environment slowly runs downhill to the point where we may have civilization being untenable in some fear? We may trigger the sixth great extinction in our planet's existence and may ourselves end up being victims of said extinction? Or do we want a more cooperative world where everyone can win and we don't have a zero-sum game? I think we are seeing progress towards it because people are getting fed up and taking a stand. That's why organizations like the AGAC and the Head On Radio Network family encouraged me. And by the way, Bob could always use some support for the horn because, unlike certain other people who are addicted to Oxycontin and seem to go to Dominica with Viagra for a very unmentioned reason, Bob relies on the grassroots. You not only have conversation radio, this is grassroots radio. And we have to realize our own power because, in the end, I think that's what's going to save us. I'm not expecting political messiahs. I'm not expecting angels on high or aliens on high to descend and save us. But if we can find the goodness in ourselves as we have again and again in U.S. and human history, we can make progress. And yes, there are going to be people along the way who are standing in the way. See Joe Manchin, who as I posted elsewhere, as a regular listener to the Head On Radio Network and Bob King, from Joe Manchin's tendency towards douchebaggery. If the Senate were to become dominated by the Republicans, I would shortly expect him to announce a switching party. Why? Because I don't believe Joe Manchin and several other politicians are really Democrats in the tradition of LBJ, JFK, or FDR.
Well, Will, as quick as you can find me an LBJ, FDR, or JFK who actively worked to put a Republican friend of the family in the Senate of the United States, yeah, because that's exactly what's... I mean, we... And while he has never been a champion of the people in terms of the coal industry, Jay Rockefeller has at least had a little bit of statesmanship about him and has talked at least about the health implications of the coal industry vis-a-vis the people who work for it. We can't get him to talk yet about the innocent victims, but he'll at least talk about things like black lung and workplace safety. Jay Rockefeller is stepping down as of the end of this term, which means he will be done at the end of 2014. He's retiring.
I would say now is the time to speak up because...
Wait. So Joe Manchin is out there actively trying to discourage Democrats from running against his old family pal, Shelley Moore Capito. A little bit of West Virginia history here for you, Will. Shelley Moore Capito, before she married some fellow named Capito, was just Shelley Moore. And she is the daughter of Arch Moore. Arch Moore being his own little giant racketeer-influenced corrupt organization of one. He is the most corrupt man ever to occupy the governor's mansion of West Virginia, and that's saying something, okay? He was just a money-grubbing, corrupt little freak. He was governor, for instance, when the Buffalo Creek disaster took place, and he did everything in his power to try to keep journalists from going in and documenting that horror that was caused by a few million gallons of toxic coal waste that wiped out an entire holler, Buffalo Creek. He got to be governor in 1968 because Joe Manchin's uncle, A. James, had been college pals with Arch at West Virginia University. And the Manchin family formed something called Democrats for More and got Arch Moore elected governor of West Virginia for two terms then, and then he got another one later on, and that's when the indictments started flying around. And so the Manchin family have never been anything you would really call big D Democrats. They are plutocrats. They are self-ocrats. And right now, Joe Manchin is doing everything in his power to put a Republican in Jay Rockefeller's seat in the United States Senate. So just understand how little of a Democrat he is. If the Senate were to swing Republican in the coming 2014 elections, I have no doubt that the day after it was tallied, Joe Manchin would declare that he had been stricken blind on the road to Damascus, had seen the light, and Jesus had told him to become a Republican.
Oh, I believe it. There's so many opportunists out there. That's why we have to fight twice as hard. I mean, too often, I think we forget that we have power. And to be blunt, I think that's something that is kind of almost a meta message, so to speak, behind a lot of what the GOP and right-wing radio puts out. Namely, you can't fight City Hall. The corporations are running things, and we run the government. Well, okay, just enough government so that we can manage to make sure that, yes, the millionaire or billionaire that you hope to be one day is doing well. And it's just high time, I think, for us to take a stand. And this is why I'm encouraged, because we are seeing people work on things like the AIC Act, approach fracking, approach other issues such as campaign finance reform. And even though with the idiocy going on in the House GOP, where they're still scrambling together to get enough votes to pass their hostage-taking demands, and guess I will call it sedition, as that seems to be the most appropriate term, we are seeing wonderful people taking a stand in many places. We see young people like Cassie growing up who are going to be something remarkable one day. So even though there's lots of cause for despair, I also see causes for hope. And let's not forget that, even if we have to see politicians who, how would I say it, if their corruption was made manifest, they would dissolve into a pile of slime. No offense to slime.
I was going to say, but I think that's accurate.
Slime does serve a biological purpose. I'm not sure that some of the politicians I've come across in the Midwest, the Southwest, and some of you are citing from your area, really do much except contribute to the ground in the after they pass. But we can be active, and there's lots of ways to do so. I mean, contact your congressional representatives and senators on the AIC Act and other things you care about, because if we don't act to use our power, the loudest voice in the room is the one that has the biggest wallet in hand.
It's true. Brutal, but true.
Yep, and we're the only things that can act against it. And if we don't, it's kind of like, okay, there's a Super Bowl game, and one team decides not to show up. We have to show up. We're going to have setbacks and defeat, but we have to be in it for the long haul. In long haul, I believe that Dr. King was correct. The arch of history bends towards freedom, and I believe justice as well.
Yes.
So with that, I'm going to let somewhere else get out. And remember, please support the horn. You can't find anything like this on the radio waves, and especially most times. Have a great night.
Thank you, Will. Thank you kindly. You have a good night as well. Bye now. Will calling from Chicago on the Skype line, and it's true. And we're going to get through this latest crisis, but it always takes the determination of the Horn commune, family commune, to keep this going. 28 minutes past the hour, I got a couple of just absolutely loopy stories. First, let me simply say that I had no idea that there was a website called Daily Paul. But there is. P stands for peace, AU stands for gold, and L stands for love. Peace, gold, love. Hey, yeah, okay. Dedicated to restoring constitutional government to the United States of Numerica. America. This was posted on my Facebook page, I think just to give me, make me run tearing at my hair in the yard just a little bit. Still think Obama is great? The bright light in your mind might be measured in megatons, said the person posting this on my page. No, I don't think anybody was playing. This guy's a real live Looney Tunes. But over at the Daily Poll, headline, you might, really, this, we haven't had a real live first class tennis ball and duct tape moment in a while. This is it. Headline, D.C. Navy Yard shooting linked to investigation of Obama for treason, a.k.a. false flag nuke attack on D.C. per DHS playbook. This was filed in the Daily Paul Liberty Forum. You know, liberty, freedom, Wolverines! Posted September 22nd. This info is deeply disturbing, as it should be. Okay. Wall's kind of squishy where you are there, author. While most of the facts, as suggested here, seem to fit, I think we must be very careful at this point in time about saying this was actually the case. The piece begins with a quote from Franklin Roosevelt. In politics, nothing happens by accident. If it happens, you can bet it was planned that way. Okay. Really, get the Thorazine dart ready. The dart gun has a little laser heat seeker, and just, and I'll be okay in a minute, because I'm not going to be okay after I read this. This is not the Daily Current. This is not the Onion. This is not some sports pickle page. This is not, satire. How brilliant you know. And I think it's going to require my best professional newscaster voice. U.S. military police were targeted and killed by Obama in the Washington, D.C. Navy Yard shooting. Why? agents from the U.S. military's criminal investigation units had uncovered a plot to detonate a nuclear device in the heart of the nation's capital as part of an Obama government false flag. Officials from NCIS and the U.S. Office of the Provost, both with field offices inside the Washington, D.C. Navy Yard, had threatened to arrest Obama for planning to attack Syria without congressional approval following a planned nuclear detonation false flag in Washington, D.C. The office of the provost is on the second floor of Building 34, 1 First Avenue. Thanks for giving us the address. The United States Naval Criminal Investigative Service is the primary law enforcement agency of the United States Department of the Navy. It investigates activities concerning crimes against or by United States Navy and United States Marine Corps personnel, along with national security, counterintelligence, and counterterrorism cases. A false flag is the crime of treason, levying war against the United States. On and on and on. And, I mean, it just plops it out there, steaming on the pavement. Yeah, Barack Obama was going to nuke Washington, D.C. Man, that just has straw in the tequila bottle all over it. And, of course, again, the website is called the Daily Paul. Meanwhile, Irish Dave noting, but of course, my electric toothbrush is tuned to the NCIS channel, and that's just the way I overheard the chatter. And then... See, these inconvenient facts keep getting in the way. Marty writing in, wasn't Obama in D.C. at the time? Well, yes, but he has special Kenyan Muslim radiation-resisting Iron Man suit thingies. Really? Obama had the people at the Navy Yard shot up because they discovered he was about to nuke Washington, D.C. Because he's a Kenyan Muslim. Lottie in the chat room. And as always, Mr. Phelps, we will disavow anything associated with your actions. The tape will self-destruct in 10 seconds. Yeah, it's time to make this guy disappear from my friends list. I took a look at his page real quick. Zionists operated the concentration camps and helped murder millions of innocent Jews? John Lennon talking about the Illuminati? On and on and on. Because, you know. Let's go to the phones while I've still got some shred of sanity about me. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it sounds like that friend misspelled Alex Jones got you somehow.
These guys are out Jonesing Alex.
I guess so.
You know what? I screwed the whole bit up, didn't I, Jeremy?
No,
I should have read it in the Alex Jones voice. Wait a minute.
Well, no, I was going to say, I couldn't tell you if you did, because I just tuned in, because I've got a couple stories to share with you. But
U.S. military police were targeted and killed by Obama in the Washington, D.C. Navy Yard shooting. Why?
Yeah, it works that way, doesn't it?
It does. But I caught a couple stories today. Well, one hits pretty close to home. We had a a guy here last night in a little town called St. Albans, which is about 20 minutes from the Canadian border. He got into a kind of a traffic altercation with a young lady. And I guess she cut him off, or I don't know how the story exactly went. But in the end, she jumps out of his car, he jumps out, and unloads a 9mm clip into her because of road rage.
Wait, what? Unloads the what?
A 9mm clip into a lady last night in a town right near me. And then the police come and bust him, and he tries to use road rage as an excuse, hoping they won't arrest him.
What, he didn't use freedom?
Oh, he even reloaded the weapon after, too, because he wasn't quite done.
Wowzer. That's brassy.
Yeah, some of the witnesses say he shot her in the head. She died on the first shot. And he walked up and unloaded the rest of the clip in her to make sure she was done. And this was just a random person. They didn't know each other from Adam. So when things like this happen, it kind of shocks some reality back into even little Vermonters that we're not untouchable from some of these. It wasn't a mass shooting, but still some of these random acts of violence, which don't generally happen up here, but when they do, they still kind of numb us.
Yeah.
And of course, when people hear about this, they said, well, everybody should get a 9mm now. And I think it was in jest. And from the friend I had that said this, I believe it was, and he said that, and there should be one day a year, and I said, wait, hold on a second, there may be a movie about this summer, where you can go out and commit any crime and the law won't touch you, you can murder whoever you want. He said, really? He doesn't watch TV. I said, yeah.
Yeah, that was a movie. That was a movie I didn't go see.
So the joke failed on him, but I knew he was going with it automatically, so I said, Holly's already thought this up for entertainment. The second one is, I don't know if you saw we all heard the heinous story about that nice school teacher in Montana.
Yeah.
Who got 30 days for raping a 13-year-old girl.
Right, that's kind of like the preacher in Iowa who got his 17-year sentence reduced to nothing after he was caught masturbating the demons out of little boys.
Right. And then she killed herself before it went to trial, and today CNN promptly put up that he was scheduled to be released this morning at 9 a.m. for serving his 30 days. He'll be on probation because, you know, probation fixes everything for the next 14 years and 11 months.
Well, okay. I'm sure he'll be fine.
And, you know, I talked to some people, and for the most part, people will agree. There's some people that will look at you kind of funny sometimes, and unfortunately still live in that society, but I looked at him and I said, for Christ's sake, rape alone will ruin someone's life. It will destroy what's left of, if you want to say a soul, it'll destroy that in its own, by doing its own damage. And then let alone have her kill herself over it. How the hell did he get a 30-day sentence out of this?
I don't know. I would actually like to have somebody conversant with the laws of the state of Montana explain that to us.
I told the guy I was talking to, I said, I would not be a nice judge in this case. In my mind, it would be, rape's a horrible thing, but compounded with the fact that it was to a minor and things that happened, the guy was like 40 at the time, I would have said, 50 years, see you when you're 90. And chances are he wouldn't have made it back out. I would have no compassion for that. I really wouldn't. Monsters like that will do that kind of damage to society have no place in it. I'm not for the death penalty, but I'm kind of for putting the lights on where they can't hurt other people.
Yeah. It's because I think most psychological professionals will tell you that if you are a serious pedophile, there's no cure. I mean,
I would say that's across the board now, Bob. From all the studies I've heard and all psychologists and all thoughts of it, these child pedos that go to jail and stuff or other wonderful things like that, they can go through all the therapy they want. It's something that's genetically in them. You cannot get rid of it. And to not reoffend in a lot of their cases is almost a predictable certainty that it will happen and that it wouldn't ever not happen again. I mean, we had a guy right here in Burlington who was staying at a motel, I'm not shitting you, within 300 yards of the school. He came out as a high-risk offender, no, high-risk for reoffense. He went through all the treatment and stuff, but the police said, keep an eye on, they didn't say these words, but I say, this fucker in this way, because we want to put him back as soon as we can. And sure enough, within a month, he was back in jail for the obvious.
Right.
But he went through all the treatment, so he went through the criminal system, and in the criminal system, there's your release date, which is for good behavior or whatever, and then there's a date called the max out date. He did all the treatment. Wait, I take it back. I'm sorry. No, he never went through the treatment. He never wanted to do it. And in that case, he couldn't get out for good behavior. That's what makes the story even worse. And in that case, you have your max out date. Max out is basically the date you walk free and probation can't even touch you because you've done your sentence. You've done what the law said to the day, to the hour, to the minute, what you have to serve.
Yeah.
So he walked out of a maxed out sentence. So the police could only just sit back kind of helplessly and wait and basically just say, this guy will reoffend. It's just a matter of time. Keep your eyes out for him. And sure enough, he did. And I think he has a court case coming up here real quick to put him back in for another 15, 20 years.
Hard.
Yeah.
Just hard. And that's, you know, that's why I had such a little on-air hissy, what, two prayer meetings ago about the guy in Iowa.
I mean,
really? You get the, because the judge reduced his sentence from 17 years to no years at all. Go and sin no more.
Wasn't it knocked down to time served or something stupid like that?
No, he was given probation and anti-sex abuse counseling. And coincidentally, and this was the horrifying part, continuing contact with his own children.
I know of a couple here in Vermont. I might have even mentioned the story a while back. I forget. But basically, they had a close family friend, meaning I think the husband's best friend or something, who repeatedly molested their youngest daughter from the ages, between the ages, I want to say, 6 and 13 or 14. So a good stretch for 7 years, we'll say, just for safety. And he went in front of a judge, and the state asked for a minimum of, it was like 35 years or something like that. The judge gave him 3 years of time served. No probation after.
Ugh. Ugh.
Now, that judge has caught a lot of stuff because he's what the conservatives love to scream out as a liberal judge. He seems to almost be too considerate and too kind to some offenses. But at the same point, I don't know. I lost my train of thought on that one.
No worries. It, stories like that are kind of overwhelming.
Right. So, and even in his case, he hasn't reoffended. He's been out for a while now. He was waiting in jail because they couldn't find housing for him. Vermont's pretty good about putting these people in a with the exception of the guy I just talked about, in a somewhat suitable area, and they let the community know. I mean, we're real activists about it here in Vermont. We seem to, like, let the whole neighborhood know, you have an ex-pedal coming into your yard. Watch out for him. It's mean to do, but like we said, the studies have shown time and time again that this is something you don't cure. And as far as I'm concerned, a lot of cases, it should be one screw-up and you're done. Not executed, but you're away for the rest of your life. You're done. You've ruined someone's life.
Especially when it's obvious. I mean, when yeah. And by obvious, I don't. What I mean is there are close calls. There are close cases. There are people, and that's the failing of the jury system, because we cannot look into minds and you know, truth detectors, lie detectors, don't work. But in cases where it's overwhelming, it's hard not to argue for long term incarceration just for the simple good of the community.
Right, like I said, I'm in very rare cases am I in favor of the death penalty. Tim McVeigh, for one, I was all for it. That kind of a mass killing, no place in society. In fact, I think we should have brought him out back and shot him. Just done it right there and saved us the tax dollars. But, like I said, in very rare cases, I think it's an acceptable punishment. That all being said, I did find one bit of kind of, put a smirk on my face and kind of irony in the sense that, well, we didn't see this coming. even if it's just because of what's happening. But we all know that Zimmerman's wife is leaving him because of...
And has now said she's not quite so sure about just how not guilty he was.
She didn't just say that. She said she doubts his innocence.
Yeah.
So not even not sure. She doubts that he didn't do it the way he said he did. Because there are no witnesses, obviously, other than people hidden in their houses. So I find that ironic that all this happens and there's still no justice for him. Guys like this, OJ, usually you give them enough rope, they'll hang themselves eventually. And he probably will. Maybe even literally.
There would be no tears shed on this on my part.
None here either. But I'll let you know because I've bitched enough. I've got my anger out for the night, so I'm good.
I'm good. Well, I'm glad we can provide a service, Jeremy.
Yeah, no problem.
You take care. Bye now.
You too. Thanks. Bye.
Jeremy calling from Vermont. We are working our way toward the close of the program this evening, and we really haven't had any food porn this evening. And I don't think we're actually going to have any food porn, except to say that over time I've developed this practice of recommending products when I find them, and they turn out to be really yummy, and the folks who make them turn out to not be hopeless right-wing assholes. So to that end, I think in order to be consistent, we have to work the other side of the street too. When you run across a product that you thought was okay, and it turns out to be run by an asshole, we have to talk about that too. So this stuff is on the grocery store shelves, even in a place like West Virginia. Barilla Pasta, is it Barilla? Barilla. They make sauces, they make different, you know, they make tortellinis and raviolis, and it's in the refrigerator section, so it's fresh, and it ain't bad. Except for the fact that even though I've read the label on it, I've never found that homophobia is one of the ingredients, but apparently it's the first ingredient. That, at least according to Guido Barilla, who is president of Barilla Pasta Company of Italy. He gave a radio interview yesterday, and via John Aravosis over at America Blog, he said that his pasta, his family's pasta, was only for traditional families. He said that, and this is a quote, good God, we won't, and he did it while he was, I guess, I don't know, on a radio program of some sort. We won't include gays in our ads because we like the traditional family. If gays don't like it, they can always eat another brand of pasta. Everyone is free to do what they want, provided it doesn't bother anyone else. But it bothers Guido Barilla for gay people to eat his pasta. I had no idea that there was a sexuality index that applied to effing pasta. But this guy's probably I'm sure he's a millionaire. And he just glibly said that we're not going to have any gay people in our ads. We support the traditional family. And then, all of a sudden, the world kind of went, what? And lo and behold, the next thing you know, Guido Barilla's out there running. No, he didn't double down. He backtracked. With reference to statements made yesterday... Notice that with reference to statements made yesterday, not with reference to statements I made yesterday. With reference to statements made yesterday, I apologize, and apparently this guy has learned the art of the non-apology apology. with reference to statements made yesterday, I apologize if my words have generated controversy or misunderstanding, or if they have hurt the sensibilities of some people. Some people. You gay people. In the interview, I simply wanted to highlight the central role of the woman in the family. So he's okay with lesbians buying his pasta? Just not gay men? How about bisexuals? So there will be no more Berea pasta coming into... Is it Barilla? Berea? Somebody help me. Chat room? Anybody? Please? Announcer? Yeah. Nope. There will be no more Barilla pasta coming into this house. I don't care if it turns out to be the most wonderful pasta on planet Earth. I'll find something else. Oh, he was trying to dig his way out in a big way. I have the utmost respect for any person without distinction of any kind, the greatest respect for gays and for the freedom of expression of anyone. I simply wanted to highlight the central role of the woman in the family. Oops. Well, this guy's in Italy. Was he not paying attention to Pope Frank? Who said, we don't have to talk about it. Aurelio Mancuso of Equality Italia said, we accept the invitation from the Berea owner to not eat his pasta. Really? Pasta? Sandra tweeting, I guess he thought his shit was inelastic or something.
Oh.
Those homosexuals can go eat someone else's pasta. And is it okay if people like me with traditional families also buy someone else's pasta too, Guido? Because I can't stand the idea of putting $1.97 in your bigoted homophobic pocket. I can't. I just can't. Can't stand it. No. What does that mean? I simply wanted to highlight the role of the central role of the woman in the family. But I am glad. I'm glad he. Well, is it safe to say his words have generated controversy? I don't think they've generated any misunderstanding, and I think they have hurt the... No, they haven't hurt the sensibilities of some people. They have hurt people, because this is mean, hateful, bigoted, hurtful speech. So while I seldom give marching orders or suggest that anyone do anything in particular, I'll break with that policy for a moment here. If you're gay, or if you love people who are gay, or if you care about equality at all, leave the damn Barilla pasta on the shelf. It's in your grocer's refrigerator case. Leave it on the shelf and let it freaking rot there. Oh, it is Barilla? Okay, thank you, Kim. Kim from New York City. It's Barilla. L's are pronounced. Yeah. Leave it on the shelf. Let it rot there. Let it rot. And thanks to Sal for being the only one who contributed during the program this evening. It is deeply appreciated. Thank you, Sal. Thanks to everybody who has been contributing. It is deeply appreciated, and it is what will keep us on the air. Thanks for your ideas, your calls, your comments, your emails, your tweets, your Facebook posts. Thank you. It's what creates the community and the conversation. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AcheAct.org. Friday on the front porch tomorrow. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the Horn.